Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.
everybody. Greetings. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Today, same as yesterday, hot here in Chicago, but I was enjoying it. Real hot. Well, depends. Depends on what kind of light skin you got or weak skin or whatever you want to call it. But I love it hot. I love it blazing hot. I love it 100 plus. Every day I look forward to it being blazing. I was looking forward to having a conversation with Captain Hit and a few other people. But they haven't called in yet. So I want you to go ahead and think about this past week. And if you had a chance to go ahead and look at this hearing involving Eric Holder, oh my goodness, that's been ridiculous. It's just an out and out blatant disrespect. And they sent it a message. Now, if you've been paying attention to any of those hearings, if you get a chance, go ahead and look at some of them hearings. Go back and go there on YouTube. Go back and check them out. And it's just blatant disrespect. It's sending a message to Eric Holder, and the message I'm hearing is, hey, nigga, you ain't supposed to have that job. I mean, none of y'all are supposed to be moving up. And it's just a damn shame that we are not paying attention to real life stuff as they disrespecting our people right in our face. And any of you that think you made it, or you listen to this myth that we've made it, we come a long way from yesterday, go look at them hearings. Yeah, look at them hearings with Eric Holder. And you see what people really think of us. Because if you ain't been paying attention to the murders, lack of jobs, lack of businesses, lack of opportunities, miseducation of the Negroes, I don't know what planet you've been living on, but you really need to go ahead and pay attention to what's been happening. And that thing with Eric Holder is truly appalling. It's just blatant disrespect. And it's really a waste of time and money. But it seems to me that these bigots will go, there's just no limit to how far they will go to go ahead and to beat up a black man. And I see one of my guests has called in. I want to work with this brother here. It's a local brother. Brother Ken, you there? Your mic's open.
I am here, man. I am here. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Ken, what are you been checking out that Eric Holder thing?
I caught some of it briefly online. And, again, it does seem like a travesty, being that I can't recall any other, you know, high administrators in the, you know, secretary level being sequestered like that. You know, that's just me. The thing about it is, man, sometimes you gotta realize it is what it is. You know, it's not so much hitting you with a problem; it's like hitting you with a solution. So you already know what's being said, what venues, what media outlets are used in promoting, you know, his demise. And you just don't use those media outlets.
Right. You know, it's fixed news. That's what really, really, that's like the number one culprit there. Hey, brother, your phone is echoing. How are you?
Okay, is that a little bit better?
Yeah, that's a lot better. That's a lot better. You
okay,
know, real
sorry.
Quick,
But
I want you to go ahead and jump on this real fast. I want you to go ahead and tell my audience here what you do and the reason I called to get you on this show.
Okay. Well, my name is Kenneth Hawkins. K. Bryant Hawkins is what I call myself, senior. And I am the managing partner of Precious Cargo, LLC. But what I have done, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I did a lot of Navy time on the data processing. You know, I was really digging that. But, you know, after a while, it just it became mundane, it was time to move on. You know, let somebody else have some fun. So I went on and I consulted for a little bit. You know, consulting was great. It's like putting out fires and keep it moving. But you need something more solid. You know, as you get a little time goes on, you get a little family oriented. So I kind of settled into some things and just kept consulting on a larger scale, projects, you know, moved over to projects. What I did was I formulated a corporation because I didn't know anybody else that was doing that. You know, and I wanted to have some type of legacy, you know what I'm saying? It's one thing we don't seem to want to have these days is the ability to leave a legacy. You know, so I got sons. I would like them to know me for something other than pop, you know. So what I did, man, is I put together an idea with a couple other gentlemen. Started a company called Precious Cargo. We created an app that it takes tracking. It's a PATS project, P-A-T-S, Patron Attendance and Tracking System. What it does is it counts children getting on the school bus and getting off, going to events, and sends that information directly to the attendance office. You know, and what that does is it absolutely, without any more clipboards, any more verbal anything. You know, we have options for facial recognition. You know, you can turn it around. It could be a tablet. It can be an iPhone. You know, you can have facial recognition if you like. I think the thing about it is we wanted to make sure that no child ever gets left, and it's very, very fuel efficient with the GPS included on it and everything. But ultimately, it spawned a parent app, which I have been developing now. Now, I had it in development because I thought about these children that we have right now, the ones that get involved with gangs or they don't know what to do after school. They're susceptible to negative influences. I have created a parent app from like junior high to high school will alert that parent if that kid ever cuts class. Now, when you think about it, when you talk about accountability, you know what I'm saying? When those that little store got jacked on 79th and Ashland, it was what, five men under 20. You know, where were they at? Where's the accountability? So, yeah. You know, one of the things that I really believe in is I ain't coming out with nothing like a Angry Birds or, you know, something for entertainment purposes like that. I will actually want something to be functional. I want something to, you know, be a boon to whatever industry I decide to hit. With this particular app, though, I use it, you know, with the parents app, with a tracking and alert system that knocks you right out or alerts you immediately. I can sell it to prison systems, tourism. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's a worldwide type of an app, and it's just because of its functionality. And we're just in the beginning stages of it, and I'm really excited. We just got through the trade show. It was really, really nice. The feedback was outstanding.
Okay. It's ready, up and running, right?
Yeah, I got the prototype sitting in front of me, man. I got the prototype. I also have the page, Precious Cargo.com, it's P-R-E-S-H-U-S, cargo.com. That's kind of information. You can actually see it. You can see it, what it looked like on the different phones and, you know, tablets and things like that. But like I said, it's a very, very useful app because if you see some of the features, I mean, you can see the kids' faces. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to, you touch a kid's face, you get a map as to where that kid lives. You know what I'm saying? If a kid decides that they're sick and they're not coming to school that day, then the application actually takes you to the next stop, saving you gas and time. You know, I have an SOS button included so that if something kicks off on the bus, you know, and it's an app that can be used with any other application on any platform. So you have a surveillance system of stuff.
On just about any platform, you can use on almost any type of equipment.
See, the thing about it is, I had to make it general because technology changes, and the app has to be adaptable, upwardly mobile. But the only platform that we don't support is Java, because BlackBerry's kind of phasing out a little bit. But that's just my thing. And you know what I'm saying? But on the other platforms, we have the prototypes ready and working models. We're testing it out in the school systems in Indiana.
So you're up and ready to go. So you're ready to go ahead and put it on the market?
Oh, yeah, we're going to test it out. We're going to test it out in summer school down there just to see how it goes.
Because, where's that test? You know, where's the test market? Where are you testing it?
We're testing the Michigan City area.
Okay. Why are you going up there? Why are you ain't staying down here, man?
Because it's hard to get into the CPS, man. I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to tell you. I can't, man. I'm trying. Look, it got to go old school. You know, they don't do this no more. You got to go up and say, hey, can I take you to lunch? You go up to an administrator now and say, can I take you to lunch? Can we talk about something, man? I'm telling you, SWAT team come out. You get hit like any other type of a salesman. And if I'm not mistaken, they've got like over 90,000 contractors in the Chicago public school system. Our new mayor wants to cut that by like 45%. It's hard for me to get an audience with the people I need to. So I decided that if I can go all over the country, around the city of Chicago, maybe I can get somebody to sit down and talk.
Okay, so you're going to be testing in Michigan City. When is the testing supposed to begin?
Well, it's supposed to begin July the 1st.
July the 1st?
Mm-hmm.
And how are you testing?
I've got a team already ready. Well, I have a team that goes out there, and they put, because it's a wireless solution, you know, we have a machine, a server that we put in the administrator's office. We connect it to the one that you use for normal attendance. But the thing is, the application, it probably takes about maybe 30 to 45 minutes to teach an administrator how to use it, you know, because now she's not only having pictures and names, she's having photographs and maps telling her where these kids are at. So, you know, you got to get it kind of freaks people out at first. But depending upon how that administrator takes to the information, and you know, it's the same as they would normally get it. And the parent app, the beauty of it is it's something I can sell to parents, and it can just connect to whatever school district they're in that range. If they've got a child in that range, they don't have to have any kind of special plan because it's all wireless. So all they have to do is get the parent app, and boom, they're already connected.
It is a comment here. Someone's saying that, hey, you should introduce this to the Chinese and the Indians also, and maybe you should go to the the board members and the PTA. Have you done that yet?
Well, okay, that's a very good question. I think that you got to understand, to get an audience with these people, it's all about timing. Right now, this is the summer semester. All the administrators are gone. For the next 60 days, you will not be able to really see anybody but a skeleton crew. And administratively, you don't want to give anybody anything over the summer. You want to wait until their funding is together in the beginning of the school year. Then you display. But by now, the test market is already out because, as I said, once I do one school district, they all you know, kind of want you to do this, you know, the same thing because it's such an efficient solution, and it's like a third of the price of our nearest competitors. That's why I enjoyed the trade show the other day, because I was like, wow, these are not just regular administrators that are coming to see the display. These were their competition. They were coming over, and they were like, Ken Droves, can I get a pamphlet? Can I get, you know what I'm saying? And I enjoyed that, man. I really did. I really did.
That's beautiful. So you think you said you have some sales right away?
Yeah, well, we just started the trade show. The website just went up not too long ago. You can see us also on Facebook, like us. One of the things, that, as I said, it's just this is in the beginning stages.
Okay. Another comment is the school districts still have board meetings during the summer months. Have you checked that out?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yeah, we are. We've already met with them, and that's where we're able to, proceed in our testing. We are in conjunction with them. They want to be the first ones, man. So of course they want to kind of get the dibs in, and that's cool. That's what we expect. We expect there to be a healthy competition for our attention.
Here's my question: are you ready to share that cost right now? Tell me how much it costs.
Oh well, you got to go to the website and get some information.
I'm gonna look it up.
Please do, man. Please do. Because if you go to the website, you'll see what it looks like. You see some of the, a couple of the little screens, but But it's an infinite number. You know, it's just depending upon what package you get and how many kids you got in your district. Ready to do a lot of districts at the same time because I had to kind of put together this project for immediate mass production. And that's what I do. So I'm ready.
But isn't it like isn't it kind of like a one of those chips they talk about that they get the dogs and stuff? Isn't it something
no,
like that?
No, that's RHD. That's something like a chip they put in ID cards. Now, I have, again, there's that option if you got a school that got the, you know, those cards in it with those ID chips in it. The app can scan for that as well automatically. I think a kid will just come up, put their ID toward the phone or the device or the tablet or whatever, and boom, they're blanked in. And then the face comes up immediately. Bus driver looks and says, okay, that's that kid next. No more clipboard. It saves, man, it saves so much time. And one of the things is the guy who came over house with wireframe drawings on paper and said, can you make this come to fruition? And I didn't think it could until I really looked at it. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. I thought about it. And I immediately thought about CPS because, you know, I'm from the West Side. So I thought about how bad the schools are and how many kids you see. You know, walking around and during the day, it's ridiculous. I ride the train line during the day sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I was trying to mention to people before, man. My old high school, man. I went past there one day during the school day just because I'm in the old neighborhood, and the school was closed. It was like on a Tuesday. I couldn't believe it. I came back the next week and it was closed again about a Thursday. Man, I was like, wait a minute. No, they ain't out that fast. But that's on the West Side. Schools on the West Side, well, schools in Chicago, period, you know, dealing with us, they're just not really up to par. And it seems like you're getting worse. And another system like yours can kind of help. But it's not so much, I think that it's not so much with the kids. It's a lot of the parents. They might need this kind of tracking system to go ahead and the person with the that's a little bit more responsible should be the one holding the strings and go ahead and tap them in the head. You know, not so much the kids, but you know, that's my stupid way of thinking, I guess.
No, accountability. But, you know, it's everybody got help with accountability. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like it's a job that got really, really big. You remember we was raised to believe it take a village to raise a child, right? And I'm just saying, you know, you gotta think. Well, how can you corral the problem? Or what little bit can you do to make an impact on something like that? And accountability is most important. You're right about what you're saying.
Yeah, because this problem just goes deeper than the kids. I mean, we are looking at the kids and saying, hey, the kids are bad. The kids are bad. Oh shit, the parents are bad. Hello, Jackie. How you doing? I opened your line.
Hey.
Say hello to Ken.
Hello.
Hi. I ain't heard you out.
Oh. Well, just hold on a minute. A lot of people keep saying that the kids are bad, the kids are bad, but it is. It's a lot of the parents that are really the more the problem. Parents, grandparents, and even in some cases, great-grandparents. So, this problem is real deep.
Yeah, man. But you know what? I'm glad you reached out to me, man. I need to pay a lot more attention to talk radio.
Man, yeah, man. Because for me, you know, after we were talking, man, I was like, okay, I see a whole lot of stuff that, man, we can work on. Especially that I told you that one word. You say it. That was it. So, but we still have to stick with it. We can't go ahead and just give up.
No, man. I got 99 problems, but failure ain't one.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted to go ahead and ask, hey, Sister Jackie, you still there? I think she must have dropped off. Well, anyway, hold on a minute. Something just came up real quick. Let me take a quick break right fast. Right.
Look at you now. Hey, do you have anything on you? Hey, do you have anything on you? Hey, do you have anything on you? Hey, do you have anything on you?
Beautiful.
So, if you go to the web,
Go ahead, brother.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you go to the other site, PreciousCargo.com, and that's P-R-E-S-H-U-S, Cargo.com, you see a photo or what it looks like and what it would feel like, you know, to use this app. So there you go.
We're going to push that, man. We're going to push that a lot, man. I'll try to have you here at least once a week if you can.
Oh, it might be my pleasure.
But Sister Jackie, you there?
I'm here. Good evening.
You know what? I wanted to talk about something real quick, the treatment of Eric Holder. You've been watching that? You've been following that a little bit?
Me?
Yes, you.
Not much. I was listening to a couple of those radio shows talk about it. There was something about like they getting on the black man. That the program was started under the Bush administration and a bunch of stuff like that. I heard,
It was a gun tracking program they started under Bush, but right now they're coming to Eric Holder. Go ahead, brother.
I said, how long ago was it?
Man, they've been doing it all week. They've been doing it.
Isn't this like 11, 12 year old case?
Well, it's the Fast and Furious. No, I don't think that long. I'm not sure how far it goes back. I'm not sure. I won't say that.
Well,
but
I understand it went back several years.
They had a different name.
What I'm just saying, quite simply, that's some old dirt. That ain't no new dirt. That's some old dirt somebody dug up. So you have to figure out how to turn that around, how to come back from that.
Right. You know, and all it is just to go ahead and it's sending a message to go ahead and say, hey, you niggas ain't supposed to be having no power, no, none of that. That's all it's saying. But the way they're doing it, they chopping at him. They don't like him. And it's some other reasons why. I feel there's some other toes that he stepped on that the Republican types don't like. They just seem to go ahead and be coming at him hard. This is just one way for them to chip at Obama, in a sense. And it also sends a message to a lot of black folks. But the message I'm getting from them is, hey, man, these people are evil, and we need to keep that in mind. Boy, the way they treat us, things ain't changed. All that marching and all that other stuff just don't matter. And just like Brother Ken, like what you're doing is what needs to be done. You need to go ahead and be entrepreneurs and be inventors and make something. Stop trying to go ahead and get the feed off these crumbs that we're being delivered from these folks. You agree? Hello?
Did he drop off?
I'm not sure. Oh, man. Oh, his line was, man. Brother
Hello?
Ken, you there?
Hello? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. You got muted, man. I'm not sure how that happened, man. What did you think about what I just said?
Well, I dig that, man. But like I said, it is a slap on the whole administration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're not looking at a new issue. You're not looking at an issue that can't be easily resolved. You're looking at some old dirt. Somebody dug up, slapped the administration. Election coming up, things come to fruition, as they say. And the thing about it is you just got to keep on moving. You really do. And you were saying, you know, innovators and inventors, and I appreciate that. I thank you for that. But the thing about it is I set up, man, I took some time off in 99. I became a chef. I got tired of corporations and projects and things. I wanted to do something that I wanted to do. And my pop said a brother always got to have more than one hustle. I was laid back with the geek thing, you know, but I really enjoy the cooking thing as well, you know. So
yeah,
managed restaurant, menu plan, all of that.
Right. I mean, I go ahead and I repair my own computers. I build my own computers, and you know, I haven't purchased a brand new one in so many long time. I just go ahead and build my own. You know, I still be involved with the geek thing sometimes, but you know, you got my other little hustles and stuff. Sometimes I go ahead and get remove viruses and stuff like that. But I agree. But we,
well, you know, hold on a minute.
But I think with a lot of the young kids, they're not exposed to that. And that's why I was saying that, hey, look, the parents messed up, the grandparents messed up, and sometimes the great-grandparents messed up because they've turned their backs and go ahead and tuned out to that, oh, that's something stupid or whatever. But it seems like these people go ahead and hand it down, they just be a constant consumer. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I agree.
Not trying to teach you any
skills. As old folks say, I must concur. you hit it right on the bullseye, man. You did.
Yeah, because
that's
all it seems to be. Is a bunch of nonsense, and it seems like nonsense sales. You know, ridiculousness sales.
I hate to admit it, man. But have you noticed? And this is a question somebody asked me the other day. What was the writer's strike about a few years ago? It was about not having enough creativity. The writer's strike in Hollywood had a writer's strike. Because the last 7 years, they didn't came out with nothing but reality shows. The cheapest shows to make and the ones that make the most money. Keep up the most mess. The ones that keep up the most mess are the most popular.
Right.
And young ladies try to emulate this behavior.
Who can be as stupid as the other one? Yeah.
As you can see, if it put us in a good light, it does not put us in a good light.
I've yet to see the one in reality show Straight from the Hood. I mean, you got all these people who got a little bit of money on it. I want to see one of them.
But listen to what you just said.
Or was the reality show, was it Cops? Was that our reality show?
Don't forget America's Most Wanted.
There you go.
Sister Jackie, say it again.
I said, and America's Most Wanted.
America Most Wanted. Yeah, that was our reality show. Yeah. Cops, America's Most Wanted.
And Unsolved Mysteries.
Unsolved Mysteries. Oh, wait, 48 Hours.
Oh, see that? Wow. We had a lot of them then.
Yeah.
That Unsolved Mystery shit used to scare me. Just the music used to scare me.
What are you
scared of?
I don't know. It was just kind of spooky and eerie.
Okay.
Those
shows, you think that those people were living next door to you? Shit like that. Have you on alert?
These reality shows don't do nothing different. The number of pedophiles that is in your area had no idea.
Oh man!
They show you a little map. You put in your zip code, bam! You see all these little red dots, and then you see the red dots.
Me,
I'll be like, damn.
Yeah, and
look,
I don't know if this Sandusky dude is about to go to jail. They said that the jury's in. They got a verdict, whatever. And this Sandusky dude, and while they're wasting time over there with Eric Holder, they should be having Eric Holder be looking into a lot of those things.
No, they just need to castrate that little fella with a rusty spoon. Call it a day.
Rusty spoon.
Let him bleed out.
That ain't nice, man. That's real nasty.
No. You can sharpen the spoon, man. Oh man, you shouldn't be that nice though.
Yeah, the way they treat that brother, man, is just divided right down by party line. You see, just how many of these Republicans are just coming at them and just going here saying some nasty stuff. It's just out and out disrespect. Don't want to let him talk. Saying he's lying. The one clip they keep playing is Dare Issa telling him he's not a good witness and all this other stuff. and just shutting them up. But this is something that's been bugging me more than the
talking about Fox News.
Fox News and all these morons. The thing that's bugging me a little bit more about that whole situation is, isn't Eric Holder an attorney? I mean, and
yes.
Let's not just talk about his black side, so he needs to go ahead and stand up and hold his thing and go ahead and let him know he ain't going to take that shit. But he definitely needs to go ahead and stand up and go ahead and be an attorney. He can come back with these guys. I mean, what is he afraid? I mean, what's wrong with this cat? He seemed like he's sitting back taking his whooping and ain't going to do nothing. I guess.
I would have to look at the clips.
Man, you need to check them clips out, man. You really need to check them clips out. They just seem just terrible. It's just this blatant disrespect. Now I can go ahead and find a bunch of them and I'm looking at a few of them, but I just wanted to go ahead and mention it a little bit because I just thought it was just terrible. It was terrible. And I don't see.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. That is it true that some person got killed? They went to, or something like that. They went to find out why this person got killed, and that's where they found these guns at from this botched FBI.
Well, a lot of people got killed, but a Border Patrol officer got killed also.
Okay.
So a Border Patrol, I think a couple of them, but this one in particular, they keep putting his face out there.
The Border Patrol officer.
So once that Border Patrol officer, you know, they're just using it. It's just ridiculous. It's just a mad game here in America. That's all. We ain't paying attention to the bigger picture.
Okay.
Think so?
Okay.
Because all this stuff is old. They bringing up all these, just going ahead and just bringing up a bunch of old dirt and making it, trying to make a little bit of something new, a little bit of nothing into something. And it's appalling that we don't have enough people paying attention to that. I think it's a whole lot of people out here don't even know who Eric Holder is.
Yeah. You know what, that's an interesting question. That's it. If you ask a 25-year-old to name some of the members of the cabinet, they could. If you ask a 35-year-old to do it, they couldn't do it. That's real talk.
Oh, man, that's scary. See, that brings you back to them parents, man. Shoot. Mm-hmm. Parents messed up, grandparents messed up, and some great-grandparents messed up. That's an odd
community. A comedian said something the other day I thought was kind of funny, but then I stopped laughing. He said, that's some 36-year-old grandmothers.
They've been saying that for a long time. They've been saying that for some years now.
He said it. It was funny. It was funny at first, and then I thought about it, and I stopped laughing.
See that?
Wow.
That's why we do need some comedians that's like that, though. Go ahead and put out them real issues and go ahead and make you laugh. But in a minute, you start thinking. God damn.
Hey, well, listen, brother, you know, like I said, I greatly appreciate you having me on. Well, I'm going to go ahead on and maintain another obligation.
Oh, I feel you, brother. I appreciate you coming through. I'm going to have to get you back on, man. We're going to have to extend this a little bit more. And I'm working on something else, man, because I know you got some chef skills. I'm going to have to get you in the kitchen. We're going to have to do a real nice.
Man, listen, I believe in the dinner party in a traditional sense.
I told you, man. What did I tell you, man? Sit in the backyard, sit back there, see. Ooh, boy. Yeah, we're going to have a good time, man. All right, brother.
Absolutely. Well, listen, man, I thank y'all for having me on, and have a good night.
You too, brother. Sister Jackie, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Give me a second. I'll be right back.
Oh, my goodness. That's okay. Maybe I should be following her, see what she's doing. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Maybe I should be following her? She said she'd be right back. You think I should follow her and see what she's doing? Yeah? She might be doing something wrong. I'm sitting here with my barber. She makes me look good. Real good. can't walk past the mirror without going ahead and kissing it.
Hey, I do what I can do when I can do it.
You do a good ass job, nigga. That, I look good in a motherfucking boy. I'm looking like, God damn. I was like, oh shit, man. I went to the office today, man. They was looking at me, man. I was like, oh yes, yes, boy, yes, okay. Don't be touching my head. Get on back. Get on back. Get on back. Well, what you think about that air holder thing, man? Cause you seen some of it. I know you seen some of it. You didn't see none of it?
I have not seen none of it.
That's because y'all watching the fucking videos over in the fucking shop.
Thank you, man.
You got to stop watching the goddamn mindless, clueless-ass bullshit.
8-9 hours of 2 Chainz to kill you. Yeah. I mean, I like the dude, but I'm about
to... I love the dude, too, man. But, you know, sometimes you make me, I think maybe you might need to go ahead and take a few days off so you can get some real substance in that fucking shop. Because it's a whole lot of stuff can be, I say, launched when you're in these damn shops.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ideas. And you're sitting there waiting to get your hair cut. And look at me today, man. I had a conversation with Ron. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, I thought he was pissed off at me because I overbooked.
I told you he wasn't.
Shit. That was good. That was cool. I'm just glad that he wasn't too pissed off. But he said things turned out all right. And then he's going to try to go ahead and get on board and try to help me with my project. So... that's also to help the kids. More people out here trying to go ahead and do something, put in some work, man, the better.
And Ron is the person you need because he worked in that field.
That was the first thing I was trying to talk to him about, because just unlike one of my brothers that was working in that field. And you saw him in the person at night, checking on them and stuff like that. But this fool wants to go ahead and get drunk before he comes to work. And you know what these little bastards did? Man, they let him get good and drunk. They saw him make his round. Then he went in the office and didn't lock the door all the way. They came and stole his wallet, his car keys, and his car, and his phone. And it was gone. Then they crashed the damn car.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That sounds about right. Yeah, with him.
Man, I was like, man. He was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. They talking about this and that and all this. I was like, man, well, stay away from me, man. Stay away from me, because I don't need them asking no questions. Yeah, but that Eric Holder thing was really, really bugging me, man.
So what was the situation with Eric Holder like?
Oh, it's that they got him on trial for this, for that gun running. You know, the U.S. shouldn't have been doing it from the beginning. But it's the program started under George Bush. They had, like, I think it was like 1,000 guns that they had sent into Mexico. Well, they didn't send. What they did was let these guys come and had people go ahead and buy them. And with very, almost with no background checks, nothing like that. You know, just shady. And those guns wind up on the other side of Mexico. Been involved in a lot of killings. But one of the killings was a Border Patrol officer.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, they recovered the gun. They recovered the weapon from that, man. So now they got Eric Holder on trial, and they think he's lying to them about it. But what's something else I was saying? Like, one of the things that Daryl Issa is trying to go ahead and say, the Republican jerk off from California, that's really going ahead and putting out the nasty questions. He wants them to go ahead and give up a whole lot of documents, and from what I'm hearing, is he can't give up a lot of those. Eric Holder can't release a lot of those documents because some of it's illegal and some other stuff.
Right.
So, but he still wants to go ahead and get him documents. Look, man, I think this is more of a message for us to go ahead and we need our own shit. And we keep on playing this game with them.
And they keep fucking us.
And they keep doing it, don't they? We don't seem to be getting the message. And just like your boy, want to go ahead and keep blocking the message, watching all that. And what did you say? Every last one of them damn videos seemed like the same.
They have all the videos had the same concept. It's booty, money, cars, clothes. And the clothes is getting ridiculous. I seen Lil Wayne with some leggings and some snow boots on. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is going on, you know?
Yeah.
But I just, the more I watch the videos, the dumber I feel. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because it's all the same thing. And you know what? When you said that, I started listening to the radio. And that's the only thing I heard on the radio. That was the only thing I heard on the radio, was the same thing you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It don't seem to be no different mess, no different message. And but then when you go ahead and you see some of these people in the street, and that's the same thing they constantly do. Brother Pianchi, your line is open.
Hey, what's going on, Rob?
I'm all right. How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm problem keeping my player to stay on the block top screen. You have that problem too?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, and when what I did was I had put a little bit more memory in my system, but my memory is maxed out. I need to put another motherboard in the system. But it's that problem. I can't go here and constantly hear. That's why I have to call into a lot of shows. And if I don't say nothing, you know, people go ahead and get mad. But,
my player keep cutting off. I keep having to turn it on unless I use the default player, you know, ring up my own. But they got so many pop-ups on here, man. They're selling everything from everything you can imagine.
I think that's Blog Talk.
That's Blog Talk.
I've been having that problem for a while now.
Right, that's Blog Talk because they got more popular. You go here and it's all about money. It's all about money. I got another call.
Yeah, I think you're about 3 minutes before it goes off.
Yeah. Matt won't stay on 15 seconds. Then sometimes it'll stay on and won't go off. Won't
and you can't
no
hear nothing. It's just, yeah, that's been happening. I got another call online. Captain Hit, is that you?
Yes, sir. It is me, Rob. How you doing, sir?
All right. Say hello to Sister Jackie and Brother Pianchi.
Yes, Pianchi. How you doing? How you doing, sister?
Pretty good.
And I also want to say hello to my barber, the best goddamn barber on the planet.
I had one of them, too. I started growing locks about 15 years ago.
I would probably do that in a minute. Captain Hit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we talked briefly today, man. You know, you've been in and out, man. Tell everybody what you've been doing lately, man.
Well, guys, back on the East Coast. Been here in New York for a little bit now. Working on, of course, establishing some really good connections out here. But as we talked about before, Rob, still definitely on the mission, and that is to create our own independent state. It's time to do it. I had the opportunity to go over to Dubai a couple of months ago, so I spent about almost 2 weeks there. I had a nice time. I will say that Dubai has transformed dramatically since the time I was there before. So the infrastructure has improved, transportation, public transportation has improved. But at the same time, I did see an economic slowdown in certain areas outside of Dubai proper itself. They did get hit with the economic crisis. One thing I also saw, which was very highly evident, that the population has increased dramatically since the last time I was there was in 2004. So in the last 8 years, that population has almost doubled almost tripled from 2 million to about 6 to 7 million people. And what they have done is a lot of foreigners from all over the world. In fact, there's approximately 100 different cultures that are evident in Dubai itself. It's incredible. You see people from literally all over the world. But one thing that the local people from Dubai have made sure that they maintain, and that is the absolute legislative control of the entire country. Even if you are born in the United Arab Emirates, but you are from another country, they will never give you citizenship in that country. So the difference between the locals and those that are living there as expats is there is an extreme stark difference between the two. And how can you fault a people who said this is our country and we're not going to give it up, give control to anyone else? So it's amazing that the minority of the population controls that entire country because they are outnumbered probably 6-1 in Dubai right now of locals to foreigners. So essentially they're having their cake and eating it too. They are also generating a tremendous amount of funds due to the increase in oil. So there is a big windfall in Abu Dhabi itself. And it is definitely remarkable what's happening. So I did have a great time, though. I will say I had a nice time. I felt you felt a sense of freedom. Nobody was watching over you. And people did really live life. So people weren't so concerned about, okay, let's go to work. I like to say to people, welcome to America, where people work like dogs and dogs live like people.
Dubai, Abu Dhabi has a social system where everything is provided to the people. Education, schooling. Well, I'm sorry, school and education the same, but all social, practically everything socially is provided to the people. In that country.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the locals, what I'm saying. But there's nothing wrong with that. They just import and help. Australia had some here in Texas. They was having some job fairs where they've been trying to get tradespeople. They was offering plumbers $160,000 a year to come to Australia and fulfill those shortages that they have in their building industries and pipeline.
Sure. Sure, Australia is a country of only 20 million people, very small population, huge country, but people don't realize that African Americans have twice the amount of people than all of the country of Australia. We are 2 times the size of the Australians. We are 12 times the size of the New Zealands. We are 7 to 8 times the size of the people that live, Yeah, we are about 8 times the size of the United Arab Emirates, including their immigrants.
I was talking to some people, some brothers, sisters in Africa, man, on the continent, and they were talking about how they got relatives who go over to Dubai and stuff and go and work and seasonal workers and come back. And they said they do pretty good and they come back. They got pretty nice pockets, making good money.
Yes, they do.
Get money. What's the newest thing over there in Dubai? What was the newest thing? What did you see that was a little bit, the latest path?
From an architectural perspective, I saw the tallest building in the world, 2,000-something feet high. So in a, quote, black country, the tallest building in the world exists. It's a phenomenal building, beautiful, very nice design. They improved the traffic corridor. I will say that. So the traffic corridor was definitely improved, along with their monorail. Their monorail system is completely automated. So there's no driver. It's totally automated. That was interesting to see. That ski slope that they built out there, they have this indoor ski slope. I didn't go inside it, but I went to see the structure itself. It is absolutely huge. I couldn't believe how big it was.
I just got some pictures from Dubai from one of my relatives, and they were at the ski slope, and I was like, man, okay, well, that's nice, but I got snow here in a little while, but it was interesting to see.
Yeah, it's bigger than you think. I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's not like the pictures that you see just don't do it justice. I mean, it was very, very big, But on the negative side, once again, the world islands have not been built or have not had any homes on it. The second palm has not been developed. So there has been a dramatic slowdown in residential construction in Dubai. So on the negative side, they did get hit by the economy. Out on the outskirts, when I was on the outskirts of the major city, I saw a lot of buildings that were abandoned in midstream of building. I mean, places that you would not see normally, but on the outskirts, there were certain industrial parks that had buildings that were just completely stopped. People just ran out of money in building them. Abu Dhabi.
You know what, let me ask you, and you too, Brother Pianca, you've been to the continent also. What are the natural disasters besides drought? Are there hurricanes and earthquakes, you know, throughout Africa?
No. No earthquakes.
Yeah, you're not gonna find anything that normally happens that fucks us over here. You know, not very, very few. Very, very few. Too far away to be felt.
Because the thing about the areas, the so-called drought-stricken areas, is that reversible? Do you guys think so?
Yeah, desertification is reversible.
Right. So what's the holdup?
Well, I just need somebody with ambition like David Hite to go over there and do it.
David Hite.
No, it's called Hit. I am the Hitman.
Hit, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay, brother. But I'll tell you this, man. From what I had seen, like, I guess the point that I would like to make to people is in 8 years, what the change that I had seen in 8 years was absolutely phenomenal. What has been built in such a short period of time, it's hard to describe. And it just gets to the point that when we talk about African-American nation building and occupying and finding a piece of land of unoccupied and undeveloped territory on the continent, believe me when I tell you, you will not believe what we will be able to do in 10 years' time with modern machines and modern technology. We are going to build so fast that you will have your homes, you will have roads, you're going to have your grocery stores, you're going to have your office buildings, you're going to have your internet connection, you're going to have your swimming pools and your fields, and you're going to have your basketball courts, your marinas. We will have all of that stuff in a very short period of time because of the fact that we are using modern technology. Humanity itself can build very, very fast. If you look at the Chinese and what they have done in China and what they have built, that is, now you take that of Dubai and multiply that by 1,000 for China. So if you were there and you can see the transformation that has happened over there, it's incredible. And there are enough people in the world who are looking for a job to build. Trust me. That ain't a problem to find labor. That's definitely not a problem. And I say to the people here, what do we have to lose? And I always say to the people that for those who don't believe in this mission, I say keep your black ass here in America. You don't need to come.
You know somebody who came along faster than even China, whose average personal income was less than that of Ghana? Less than $350 a year, whose private schools had a average of 60-plus students. Public schools had an average of 90-plus students per classroom when, like, Ghana had 30 and 40, who didn't have no indoor toilets in Korea, South Korea, just about 30, 40 years ago. Now they're one of the top economies in the world.
Who built them up? Because I also want to know what were the engineers using to go ahead and build up Dubai. But who built up South Korea?
They had a will.
They did it all by themselves.
They had a will, and I can't think of that leader there. I just said his name last night. I keep forgetting it. But
it's Park. It was Park something.
Park. There you go. Park. Yeah, Park.
Yeah, but I just want to know who helped build them up. How did they go ahead and get it? We're gonna have to look into that. But you, Captain Hit, in Dubai, those buildings and all that other stuff, where did they get those engineers from? Where did they get that construction crew from? Where did they, who were the architects for that? They got them from Europe, or were they from that area?
They got a lot of their architects from, there were Korean companies, engineering companies there. There were companies from France, England. There are some U.S. companies. There were some Chinese, Japanese. So they had many different nations represented there. But one of the major, the tallest building in the world, that primarily was a Korean company.
So there were no Nigerians helping in on that project? Nobody from either South
brother.
Africa?
No, there were no Nigerians, no. There were no. And this is why we got to get back to Africa, and so we can start showing the world that we can build on our own. I mean, like Pianki had said, look at Korea, which 40 years ago, 50 years ago, was decimated in a war. Look at Hiroshima, Japan, and Nagasaki. You look at them today, those places had two nuclear bombs dropped on them. And look at where they've come back. Now, 70 years ago, you look at Detroit, Detroit looked pretty good. Today, Detroit looks like a nuclear bomb was dropped on it.
Please don't remind me that. I was up there seeing my sister, man, a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, oh, my goodness. But it's some good spots. Believe it or not, you know, even with all that vacant land up there, what little places they are trying to build up, it is looking like it's coming to be something up there. So there's some people up there trying, but it just looks like they got, it looks and sounds like they got their hands tied because they don't want them to, they don't want
that
building.
Of course they have their hands tied, and we will always have our hands tied. Any minority will always have its hands tied when they are not a legislative majority. If you do not run the majority of the legislature of where you live, you will always have your hands tied. Period. It's plain and simple. It's the fundamentals of democracy. Majority rules. We are only 14%, actually 13% of this economy, of the U.S. population. The Hispanics have passed us right now. So we are the third-class citizen in America, and we are not going to get any further. We're not going to become second-class citizens again unless we start having babies. But, of course, when it comes to having African-American babies, we notice that most of the Planned Parenthoods are located in the inner cities.
Man,
so
you know
we live in an environment in which is intent on seeing the slowing of the African-American population and the destruction. And the only way for us to rescue this African-American culture, which is a unique culture in this world, the only people that can rescue us is us, and the only way to rescue us permanently is to do what the Jews have done and create a state for themselves, like every other culture on the planet. If we don't create a state for ourselves, then we will be marginalized, we will be erased into the culture forever.
But Jews have another message.
But we need to stop right now, if that's the case. Every black person in this country need to stop right now sending their children to public schools. They need to stop.
Yeah.
They ain't gonna do
that. The difference between us and the Jews is the Jews did not let their enemies educate their children. So we can never, we always comparing ourselves to other ethnic groups and what they did in America, but, I mean, it's just some little stuff that we just don't have that they do. We don't have our own language. All these other ethnic groups that surpass us, they got their own language. We don't have that. When somebody suggested it, they killed his ass. So, I mean, we're going to have to go about 2-3 generations with us, only us, educating our children. And that's how we're going to have to get them out of, you are American, you are here in American, in America, I mean. Don't necessarily mean that we are American. Like you said, we don't have a voice in legislature. Black people are, for some reason, they are so loyal to the Democrats, and the Democrats have really did nothing but separate our families. And I can't see why people are so loyal to the Democrats, black people.
And no, you're right. And sister, you are absolutely right. And in the interim, we need to continue to get our education. Now, look, this is the big problem that we're having right now, is now we don't have kids that even want to be educated. Irregardless of the schools that they go to right now, you got to have an education. We've got young African-American boys right now that are being feminized, that are being completely taught. Being taught by society, by the television and the movies and all that, to be something that they're not. I mean, go to a young African-American boy. Ask him, how do you change brake pads? Ask him a simple question like that. Go to an young African-American boy, say 16 or 18 years old. Tell him, say, how do you jumpstart a car? Point to the radiator hose. How do you check the oil in a car? Most of us on here, in my age bracket, we all knew how to do that. To this day,
yeah, actually, those minor things.
Those are, Rob, you know as well as I do, those are, like you said, minor things, Rob. These kids have no idea.
Right.
No idea about self-sufficiency whatsoever.
But Captain Hitt, but see, even though he's like teaching our kids, getting them into the schools, they had another message to back up what they were doing. The Jews did. They had another message. Okay? And pretty much that they followed that message. What is the message that we need to go ahead and be listening to?
Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power.
Well, they ain't going to listen to that, David. What they need to listen to, what they need to hear is that we got to control our own. That's what they need to be hearing. You know, it's funny you were talking about that. I had made a call into a Philadelphia radio station, WRD, where the host was, they closed like 45 schools in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia schools is going to be under state control. And the host was asking the question, why come there's no move to make sure that all students aren't getting an adequate education? And I called in. I told the lady, I said, that's not going to happen. I've been following this over 30 years as it applies to black children. The day that you keep talking about, I'm not going to do it. And really, I'm starting to become apathetic that black people just don't get it themselves. They still continue to look for the day to take care of those particular problems for themselves. If that's going to ever happen, you got to do it yourself. And
agreed.
We
have to leave. Agreed. We have got to leave. We have to leave this place and go to a new environment. We have to be completely
Why?
On our own.
Because
when you're on your own, you have no choice but to work with one another. If all of us that are on this phone call right now, if we were able to just transport ourselves into the west coast of Africa right now, all four of us, instantaneously we were there to transport ourselves, we would have no choice but to work with one another. We'd have to figure out how to feed ourselves, how to provide shelter for ourselves, how to communicate, how to do everything. And when you put people in that kind of environment in which they have to become dependent upon one another, then you're going to see the best of us rise. When the point I'm trying to make is that during the days of segregation, unfortunately, black people were better off during those days than they were today. My grandfather will state unequivocally, when he was growing up back in the 20s in Selma, Alabama, African Americans owned everything that they had in their community because they had no choice to. They couldn't go into the white community. They weren't allowed. So if you ask our great great grandparents, ask them who were the people that you went through? Where did you go for your groceries? Where did you go for your meat? Where did you go for your clothes? Where did you go for all of those things? They will tell you 100%. They had no choice but to go to an African American business. So
whites left the cities back in the 70s, like around 72 or something. They just up and left, and left it to black folks or the black community, and they couldn't and did not do anything with it. Thus, you now see the influx of Asians and also people of Arab culture who have moved in those empty void spots, and they're starting to create these businesses and these enterprises. You know, I remember seeing some areas, well, they still do exist in your major cities, but you had that building on the corner that remained vacant for 20 years. Then when Arabs come in and they do turn into some sort of enterprise, mostly grocery stores or, you know, stores that have, well, convenience outlets, then you hear the complaint, oh, they coming in and taking over. But the place was left vacant, absent of anyone, for decades, for at least two decades, and we didn't do nothing with them.
Good point.
Yes, I understand, you're absolutely right. Now, the thing that I will say about these Asian communities, where do they come from? They come from a place in which they have a nation state. They come from a place where they have a country where they all work with each other. They have no place, no other choice but to work with each other. That's why these communities create their own small pockets, the Pakistani areas, the Indian areas, the Chinatowns, this and that, because they are, that's what they are bred to believe. They come from a place where they are all together. We as African Americans, our generation has no clue of what it means to work amongst one another. Not like our grandparents did, our great-grandparents anyway. Because our great-grandparents, they had no choice but to work with one another. That's when families were strong. That's when you see some of the greatest inventions that happened with the African-American community. So we are the only culture on the planet that has not, that does not have a nation state. Yet, we don't have a problem with the Finnish having Finland. You don't have a problem with the Norwegians having Norway. You don't have a problem with the Irish having Ireland. And Ireland, how many people live in Ireland? 3 million people. We're 12 times, 15 times the size of them based on population. Norwegians, we're 8 times the size of Norway based on population. Sweden, we're 5 times the size of them. Oman, we have more people than Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Oman, and Yemen put together, the entire Middle East area, and that in the, on the peninsula. We have more people than all of those countries, yet we sit back and it's okay for them to have a country. I sit back and cringe and laugh when I see Barack Obama meeting the president of these countries, and these countries have populations so far insignificant to what we as a people have, and yet he doesn't want to even meet black folks. How can you sit back and look at a country like Yemen that has a population of 3 million people and you have state dinners? You have a state dinner for when the Saudi prince or whatever prince comes over here, and black folks are 2 times the size of the state of Saudi Arabia, but yet he'll have a state dinner for them. Korea, we have as many people as Korea as the Koreans. Israel, he's met the Israeli prime minister who knows how many times. And Israel, the state of Israel, is only has a population of 8 million people, of which many of them are foreigners. We're 5 times the amount of people of the state of Israel. And that yet they can't meet us? No, when we have our own state, when those of us as African Americans say, we're going to get up and we're going to go, if it's 1 out of 100, you will see that the others will follow. Because I'm not asking for everyone to come. No, you come on your own, under your own volition, your own will. If you don't want to come, stay here. We don't need you anyway. And I wouldn't want to be around a person anyway who doesn't believe in themselves. 10 organized men can do more than 1,000 unorganized people, and that's a fact.
Well, not to get off the subject, but Sandusky was found guilty of 45 or 48 charges.
Good for him. That's it. He's in jail, and that's it. He was molesting what? Black boys.
Wow. Wow. 40, man. Well, them 3 charges, man. That's
he should have been found guilty of all of them, but that's something else. Hey, Brother Pianchi.
Yeah.
This site you sent me, this brother who built these monorails. All right, so what's he doing to let everybody know he's doing this? How he letting us know he's doing this? How did you find out about it?
I don't know. I've seen it either stumble off into something every now and then. I don't remember. I don't even forget how I met John. But he's not the only one. That's a lot of African Americans, though. I just met another young brother out of Chicago that's doing IT business in Zambia. I'm going to try to give you his contact, too.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely need to hook up with him. But he goes to Zambia a lot?
Well, yeah, he's got a business or office over there.
Okay, so what kind of business is he doing in Zambia?
Information technology, computer consultancy, and, you know, things like that. I don't know much about that business myself.
He's not teaching it at some point. Is he instructing somewhere?
I don't think so. Then there's supposed to be some other young brothers that's doing copper mining in Zambia.
Kind of found that out. Yeah. But this, Captain Hit.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So,
go ahead, sir.
Back to the school system here. What do you think should be first when you go ahead and you want to tackle when you go ahead and you change that school system?
I'm sorry, say that again, Rob.
The first thing you want to tackle, you want to change that school system. Should it be like you just deal with one subject or you deal with 10 subjects at once? What would be your idea?
Well, I tell you this. There are new ways that, I mean, my mission order to the educators of the nation itself, what I would suggest is we want our children to be able to have some of the best math and science scores in the world. And then those experts that are amongst us that we have, it's then on them. I mean, so that's what I would say. I want our children to have the best math and science and, of course, English scores in the world. What needs to be done to make that happen? And then it's on those that it is on the experts in the African American community to figure that out. Now, one thing that I will say that one of the sisters that is a part of the International African American Caucus, she has highlighted to me that she is an educator. She says that African American children need to be taught in different ways. Our kids like to learn through rhythm and rhyme, and there's different techniques. Boys are definitely different than girls. She says the young boys are just very active. And so there are certain techniques that I would like, who knows, that our African-American educators, they'll come up with. Now, the beauty is we will be able to pass legislation to let those new techniques be done. Do we need to keep children sitting in a seat at 7 years old when they're jumping up and down and running around? Or do we let them jump up and down, run around, maybe get tired and bring them in and teach them a different way? I'm not sure what the answer is to that. But the educators amongst our African-American community, they do know the best way. And so I would leave it in their hands. But the bottom line is the mission order, and I think that we can all agree, is, and I would ask all of you individuals, would you agree that the goal should be the highest math and science and English scores in the world? When I say English, I don't mean, oh, well, we need to learn the English language. One of the things that keeps us together as African-Americans is that we do have a common language. And we have to recognize that most of the scientific books and all of that are written in English language. So we can always, I've always supported that our children should learn another language and that our children should be broken up into various sections so that we can create leaders for the future, meaning that we have a class of 100, say, first graders. Let us identify 10 of them to learn Mandarin. Let us identify 10 of them to learn Hausa, 10 of them to learn Igbo, 10 of them to learn French, 10 to learn Spanish, 10 to learn whatever language that we need to learn. So that now when those kids get older,
then they act as our representatives when they go to China, Japan, et cetera, all over the world. So I think our children should be bilingual, but we should have them master languages that will be beneficial to the development of our nation itself. So I hope you guys would agree with, let us have our, the goal should be the top math, science, and English scores in the world. And now we as the people have to figure out how to make that happen. And I'm saying leave all options open. We don't need to, let's figure out our best way to teach our children. That's my view on that.
That was nice. I agree. I was trying to find, I had some sites. There's a few people that sent me sites on, it's a bunch of different schools across the country trying to do that exact same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, one thing that I am not is I am not an Afrophile. I'm not an Anglophile. I'm not no file of nobody. I love the African-American culture of people. I don't wear dashikis. I ain't going to wear dashikis. I don't like them. I don't like their music. I like my music. I listen to Beats, EPMD. I like our beats. I like our sports. Football is a great game internationally, but I ain't following the Italian league. I just don't like it. I like our foods. I like foods from all over the world, ideally, but I'm not wearing what people are wearing in the Middle East. I ain't wearing what people are wearing in Japan. I'm not wearing anything that they're wearing.
Hey,
I
like wear
who we
are as a people. I got to wear a Galabia sometimes. See my picture there with my Galabia and my my head wrap?
Hey, listen, brother, I understand. The point I'm trying to make is that there's nothing wrong with us loving who we are. There's nothing wrong with that.
I have another call on the line. 720-690. Brother, you there? Okay.
What's up, brother, man?
What's up? Okay. What do you think of the conversation thus far?
Well, I hung up on it once already.
Uh-oh. And what was the reason
for
that?
It's okay, I guess, but I'm just so sick of us licking other people's ass. I'm just sick of it. I don't want to hear that shit.
Okay, so what was the ass licking?
It's just the undertones of multiculturalism. It's just sickening.
Multiculturalism. Okay, break that down, brother.
Regarding other groups and cultures as something to model and as something that's doing something better than we're doing.
Okay. So what are we doing?
And who have an entirely different situation and history than we have. And that have a role themselves in killing our people that were in their country to get where they're at now.
Okay. How do you brothers feel about that?
Well, let me ask this question to you. So what we're saying, do you think that the objective of creating an independent African-American nation, do you think that that is a part of this multiculturalism that you're stating?
Well, no, not at all. But the examples used to create it are not African.
I'm sorry? Say that again?
I said, no, not at all. The theme is perfect. It's just that the actual examples are not African.
And what example are you talking about?
Well, I should say at least some of the examples aren't African.
Okay, can you be more specific?
I'm not trying to pick an argument, but I'm just stating what I thought. And like the Korean example or any other culture that's not African.
Well, we're talking, when I'm looking at the example of the Koreans or any other culture, I'm looking at it from the perspective of how they have been able to improve their society and control the development of their society. Now, they have weaknesses in every single one of them. I mean, Korea right now has the highest rate of people that are hooked onto the computer. Their kids are growing up like bozos looking at computer screens. However, what they have been able to do in terms of building up their nation, increasing the standard of living for their people, has to be noted. I mean, they were destroyed in the 1950s. Sudan itself, for instance, gained its independence the same time as Malaysia. And if you go to Sudan and you look at Malaysia, it's two totally different worlds.
And I think those cultures are worthy of study insofar as we study our enemies and learn what not to do. But I don't think they serve as an example of what to do.
What I'm looking at, brother, see, I'm not studying their culture. I'm looking at, okay, why did they design their city this way? Can we build a city that better this way? I mean, you look at like Dubai. Dubai is one of the most modern cities in the world. So they have used all of humanity's knowledge to build a city of the future itself. So I'm looking at it, okay, what did they do right? Well, they built 6 lanes. Why did they use 6 lanes? Why didn't they use 4 lanes? I'm looking at it for the growth of us as a people. I'm looking at why they built the buildings and why are their buildings green and what technologies do they use? I'm not looking at it from, they named the building Sheikh whatever. I'm not interested in that. I'm like, I want to see our children in the most modern schools in the world. I want to build for our children and their families the most modern, energy efficient, and green homes in the world. I want to see one of the most modern airports in our nation in the world. That's what I want to see for us. I don't give a damn what other people live.
I understand that. I just feel as though we don't study our own enough to really know that we had all of that better than what they're doing right now.
And
With less environmental consequence and with a more harmonious community-focused center.
And when was that? Where was that? What example are you talking about?
We have both ancient and modern examples going from maybe 10,000 years or even before that up until probably maybe even the 1800s.
And brother, I understand where you're coming from, and that history is a great history to know, and it gives us it gives me the impetus to know that we can achieve that success again, but that was back then. That was 10,000 years ago.
That's the problem. You don't think of history and ancestral wisdom as back then. That's the problem with black folks. That was a vision of the future that was back then. So it can't be disregarded as simply the past. It's a prescription for what we should be doing right now.
Brother, I want to be able to build the nation for ourselves so that you can promote and teach our children whatever you want to teach. I am the guy, I'm the half that believes in peace through superior firepower. I believe that we need to be able to defend ourselves against all enemies, foreign and quote domestic, and I think that we need to be able to, I want to build roads, I want to build schools, I want to build airports, I want to be able to build all those things, and you can teach the children the philosophy you can teach philosophy to the children. You can teach them all of that. We can build, I will build a museum for you. I'm the guy that's on that.
The problem is you can't reduce what I'm saying to philosophy or something that's reduced into something that's meaningless, basically.
Hold on a minute. Let me
ask a question real quick. Did any one of these like with the Koreans coming up recently and Dubai coming up, Singapore, do you think, Brother Kometu, do you think that they used the African model to go ahead and get what they got today, to achieve what they choose to achieve today? They use any African concepts or even meditation or spirituality or anything?
Yeah, to a large extent, they're using all the fragments that they got from us. I mean, you know, we've been here longer than everybody, so yeah.
I heard somebody rattling.
But the problem is the fragments aren't good enough to build a future with.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You'd be hard-pressed to convince any black person in America today that they build something that the family dynasties of ancient Egypt built. And heck, we can't even control the quantum.
I don't need
we can't control the store on the corner. We just got through talking about
that. Okay, but you know, just as we lost control, it was from a feeling and a thought. Thoughts and feelings can be changed. You know, the pessimism just gets on my nerves.
But that's what I was saying, David. See, David, you want every all black folks to come and get involved in what it is you're talking about. I'm totally against
that. No, brother.
Leave them here.
I do not. Brother, it's going to be those competent professionals. That's what we're looking for, Brother Pianchi. We're looking for those individuals who have got, that are competent professionals and have the skill set. We're not looking for everybody. No, not at all. We're looking for a select breed of individuals that not only can believe in this, but have the skill sets necessary to be able to complete this. Meaning we need architects. We need those who understand heavy machinery, hydraulics, how to fix engines. We need to know the people who are surveyors, people who need to know information technology. That's what we need in order to get this thing off the ground.
Well, just from those two things you just mentioned, you done knocked out about at least 10 or 15 million of them.
And guess what, brother? And you know something? And then when they look back and they're going to say, wow, those people, this is what they're looking for. I don't have those skills. So guess what? Maybe I should do something about that.
I think
maybe
we missed the boat, though, because the people lose their orientation and they lose their direction when you just focus on the skills that they bring. You know, you got serial killers that know how to build a great house. So that's not the point. The point is we got to have a community to make anything work, and that's what destroyed the most, and that's what kept us poor.
Well, we need to teach anything that we build anyway, right?
It's going to start off with a small group of people. We're looking for 250 people to be a part of that pioneer force. That's what we're looking at. The pioneer force, 250 individuals.
That's a good start, but the 450 individuals, 250 or whatever the number is, they have to have a consciousness about the entire community that will make it work, not just the skill.
Agreed. You will have the ability to promote your ideas and all of that. So when we talk about that 250...
They're not my ideas. That's where you keep going wrong. They're our ideas.
What I'm saying, however you put it, your ideas, that's fine. I mean...
No, they're not my ideas. You're doing it again. They're our ideas. I didn't invent any of this shit. No.
Once again, our ideas of community, our ideas that are just natural to us. Whatever we call it. The bottom line is this: I'm ready to go across the water with 250 other competent professionals, and let's get it on and do stuff for ourselves and rule ourselves. That's it.
Now, I don't disagree with that premise. Not at all.
Where's your land at again?
We are looking. We have identified many areas along the west coast of Africa, and those areas of land that we're looking at are unoccupied and undeveloped areas. The continent is so vast, it's unbelievable. People just have no idea how vast and how much land. I talked to a guy from Suriname the other day.
So you can just go over there just with engineers and stuff like that and no army and set up base?
Yes, set up. Now, of course, we will do it in stages. But, yes, we will identify an area of land, and we will land over there and with the ability to defend ourselves from day one, and we will then mold that piece of territory. First project
is
to build the airport.
Where's your army?
Everyone that will go there will be a part of the defense force itself.
I know Africans. And Africans don't feel like they have any allegiance with us. So I'm
Thank
just trying
you.
To
yeah.
see how you're going to go over there to where they at and not expect them to attack you. Fuck the white man and the Chinese China man and all of them. It's these Africans that's going to attack you.
And we're in a land right now. We're in a land right now where we were here before the cracker was here. And the Africans that come over here don't respect us here. So I don't get it.
I don't see how you're going to go on the continent with your 250 engineers, and I ain't heard you speak of no army, and if they just going to let you set up shop.
I told
shop.
You.
I don't get it.
We're every person will be brought over there with the ability to defend themselves. We're landing with our M16, sister. So everyone's going to have
one. I'm going to tell you this.
One.
I have a coworker from Ghana. And he has been his international business and his own people always robbing him. Always.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm like, what makes you think they're not gonna rob you?
Well,
and the other thing is we can't disregard the effect of colonialism, albeit very different than how we were affected, on the Africans that are there. They don't even see race as an issue. They don't understand that we were here before slavery. They never sent nobody to come help us do shit.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And you're absolutely right. Now, you've got to look at it. Now, the area that we're going to, once again, the areas that we're going to, there's nobody there. We're not talking about landing in a city or landing in a place where there's roads. We're talking about a place where there is nobody there. They just found a plane in Egypt that had crashed in World War II. It hadn't been found for 70 years, and sister, it was on top of the sand. So
how long
there
is
are places,
this going to take?
There are places on the continent where a human being has not set foot for 100 years. It is that big. So these areas that we're looking at are areas that are unoccupied and undeveloped. So if you're going to come with a, quote, army, or you're going to come with somebody, first of all, you're going to have to come from one or two different areas. And most of the individuals that we have a part of our organization are former military. A lot of us are. And you're going to only have a couple of areas of approach to come into. But diplomatically, before all of these things happen, we will sort this stuff out diplomatically. Before this issue even
you're
comes up.
You're talking about 200 former military versus some rebels.
Do you know that it was in Guyana, what African country? There was a sergeant who took over the entire country.
Guyana,
with about 30
Africa.
Dudes. Not Guyana. It was Guinea. I think it was probably in Guinea. I think it was in Guinea. A sergeant, an enlisted man, a sergeant took over the entire country.
That was also Ghana with Jerry Rollins.
And whoever it was. So these countries have been taken over by 30 or 40 people, the entire country.
But often they're backed by the British or backed by some European power. My question is,
and
don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be negative on your ideas because we need these ideas to move forward. So even Pianchi, even though I don't like what he says about it.
Let me agree with that, that last statement. I agree with that.
And when you look at it from the international perspective, the African American is the only individual, black person in this world that has fought and died for the preservation of sovereignty for all cultures across the world. African Americans have died in World War II and are buried in Britain, that are buried in France by the thousands, that are buried all over Europe, that have died in Iraq, have died in Afghanistan, have died in every single war since the Revolutionary War. The black man from America and woman are the only African people of descent that have fought and died so that other people of the world can live with their own liberty. So,
and why do you
think
that is?
I don't know if that's so true.
But even if it were true, sister, I want him to say why he thinks that is. Why have we done so much work toward everybody else's freedom?
Because it is in our nature to fight for the freedom, for not only ourselves, but for others. We don't like seeing people oppressed in the world. There are many Medal of Honor winners that are buried in France. Do you know of the African Americans that went over to World War II in France? Do you know how many Medal of Honor winners that are buried over there?
They're even in World War
I.
Do
you say
that
all African Americans that ever entered into the armed forces did so to help other people gain freedom?
A lot of them did. A lot of them did to protect the freedom of this nation.
You know, I think they were drafted into them situations for the Vietnam War. And I mean, or, economic reasons made them go into drafted into other wars.
And listen, a lot of folks were drafted in Vietnam. It wasn't just only black folks that were drafted in the Vietnam War.
Well, you
everybody
said black people. I'm only talking about black people.
No, what I'm saying is this.
But the reason why I said that, I don't think that's true because I'm pretty sure a lot of African groups. Let me ask you this question, sister.
You tell me what African culture, what African country of people that have fought for the Vietnamese and died, have fought for the French, the Germans, the Italians, the Saudis, the Jews, the Japanese. You tell me what African country has fought and died for the freedom and also in their own country itself. Who have fought and died. You tell me what
I'm not going to answer that right now because it doesn't. Can I talk for one second? Mm-hmm. I was making a point off of what you said. You said Africans in America are the only ones that fought in all of these wars to fight other people's independence. And I don't think that that's the reason why most African people went into these armed services and fought these wars. And on top of that, I don't think that Africans were the only people, African Americans were the only people in America that did this. You can go from now all the way back. I got a coworker from Sierra Leone that fought in the last two Bush and Ash wars, and I don't think he was fighting for people's freedom. And you thinking that the Chinese people that came over here and built the railroads, they were treated like shit from the early 1800s. From the time they came here, they was treated like shit. And I'm pretty sure some of them fought in those wars, too. And I don't think that none of them people signed up to fight in those wars to gain for other people's freedoms. I think it was more different reasons why they actually signed up.
Let me ask you this. You tell me what
Chinese regiment was misled about their own freedom, sisters. That's how they fought. They were confused and misled and forced economically, like you said earlier, into fighting for what they considered their own freedom.
That's what I think. I don't think that they went into them wars fighting like, oh, let me go and join this so I can help the Japanese, but the whoever, the gay, the independent, I don't think so. In the end, a lot of them thought they were fighting
for democracy. And so they were confused about what they were fighting for, and they served their white masters obediently.
Well, I agree with that, and that's what I'm saying. I don't think it was just black Americans who did it. I think it was a lot of ethnic groups who did that.
To be more specific on that particular subject there, you did have Senegalese and other Africans that fought for the French. That was one of the reasons why come the French and the Germans fell out. I'm sorry, not the French and the Germans, but the French and Germany fell out because during World War One, after German was hit with all those reparations, and French was awarded to Rhineland, where there was a huge coal deposit. Well, the French took black Senegalese troops there, which intermingled with the German women and created what they called the Rhineland Bastards. And there was a story on that. And then, during the war between Ethiopia and Italy, you actually did have African Americans who tried to go leave this country to go fight with Ethiopia against Italy and Mussolini, but the State Department wouldn't allow them to do it. You had one black man, Hubert Julian, that went to Ethiopia and helped form the Air Force. And he was a black pilot who was scheduled to make the transatlantic flight across the ocean 3 years before Lindbergh. He's going to do it in 1924. Lindbergh did do it in 1927.
I just add, brother, that your ideas are okay, but they just seem to be a little out of context. And what I mean by that is I don't think enough of us who are willing to do that or who are discussing it know enough about our entire history to make wise decisions on that.
I'm not going to, for those that are part of my organization, we're not going to be waiting for people to have a light bulb come up in their head and say, well, let's look at it from the past. We're moving forward with you or without you.
And that's the
bottom
line.
The thing is, you can't get home if you can't remember where you live. So if you divorce yourself from the past, that's just ignorant.
No, brother, once again, we're moving forward with you or without you. I understand where you're coming from, but the reality is that if we don't do anything for ourselves right now, then we will have condemned our children to a slavery that will be worse than what happened to us during the slave trade itself. Our children right now are being absolutely destroyed.
Like Amos Wilson said, just because you are not aware of history doesn't remove its influence on you. In fact, it increases its influence on you by not being aware of it.
Well, you can send, put it this way, brother, you can send us, when we get there, we're going to have our own, we will own our own radio, our own TV. We're not going to have anybody tell us what to do, and you'll be more than welcome to broadcast every single night and let us know what we need to do, what we need to learn. But that's
okay.
One thing we can guarantee is that there will be no CBS, NBC, no CNN, no FCC. It's going to be ours. That's who will run it
from the start. That's the start.
Yeah, that's what will happen. We're not going to recognize the TRWs and the credit ratings and all this kind of stuff.
What I do hope you recognize is the repatriation movement that the abolitionists set up in the early 1900s, late 1800s. And Paul Kofi was a part of that in the 1700s, actually. It started back then. But what actually happened with Sierra Leone was before it was a CIA, you had the State Department or whatever the equivalent was at the time create these Negroes and send them back to Sierra Leone or Liberia, actually, or carved it out of Sierra Leone. And they've been at war until the late 90s, and they're still at war. The African Americans that went back, or the Native Americans, whatever you want to call them, because they were from here, when they went back, they were programmed by American values, and they still bear their names. And when the people that come from Liberia come to America now, you know, I was a family advocate working with teenagers with juvenile justice and mental health problems, and I worked with a lot of these foreign families coming from the African continent, even Nigerians and Ghanaians, and particularly the Liberians, they're more ignorant than us. And they'll come after you. They'll come 300 miles to chase your ass down. They know you're there.
Well, good. I mean, brother, I'm really not worried about that. I mean, I know I've lived around a lot of them. I have worked with them when I lived 11 years outside of America. So I've been to many countries. I've lived outside of this country for 11 years. And so I've been
I'm not talking ideas. I'm just letting you know that it's probably going to take more than you're able to say on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. But I understand, you know, your concerns, and we've definitely thought through in any type of mission that you plan, you always look at your contingencies, and this is something we've been talking about and working on for a long, long time. And we understand the reality of them, but we are men that fear no one. We don't fear them at all. We don't, and we are true fighters. We are people.
David, where are you at now? You still in what city are you in now?
I'm in New York right now.
And I met you there at the WGNU building years ago talking about this there in St. Louis, wasn't that you?
Yep, that was me. Well, I stood up and I called out, who was it? What's his name?
Eric Vickers.
Cornell West?
Yeah, and Eric Vickers was there. Liz Brown was the radio host.
Yeah, that's right, Liz Brown. I was there, with Liz Brown.
She's teaching over in the East St. Louis Public Schools now, I think.
She's in East St. Louis right now?
Yeah, you know, Chuck Norman died.
Oh, really?
And the radio station got sold.
Boy, yeah. That was a nice little show, man. That was a nice little show.
And then
I have a question for you, too.
Do you have any plans with, if that becomes successful, when it becomes successful, according to, you know, your determination, do you have any plans to make sure that you have backup and that you have continued ongoing economic ties with us here in America? Because as you study the history more, even though, wait a minute, as you know, if you study the history more, some people will disagree, but that's only because they don't know. But we were in this country before even the red man, right here in this land. And so if we're going to set up anywhere outside of home, then we should have some kind of correspondence and continued relationship with home.
First of all, yes, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, as the African-American government, I think that all of us would agree, and I'm asking you, the individuals that are on this phone right now, transform yourself into legislators. Now, let's talk together as people who are going to create laws. And I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to propose a bill to you as the legislators of you on the phone right now. I would propose a bill that we would, for our nation, as our nation develops, that the priority contracts for our nation, our government contracts, initially, we should, of course, give the African Americans in the nation itself a priority for those contracts. And we should also give African American businesses that are still in the United States a priority on those contracts. Like, if we needed to get 1,000 tons of beef sent over, we should source that beef or that corn or that whatever from an African-American farmer. Would you all agree with me that that is one thing that we should propose as a law for our land? I'm asking.
Yeah, that's a good
idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. Another point that people don't realize that your protection would come from the from the United States military itself, like AFRICOM. Citizens, right?
You're absolutely right. We will still be dual citizens. We still will be U.S. citizens, and you're right. The world is not – the United States of America is not going to allow – I mean, we as African Americans, we are 40 congressmen in the Congress. The 40 congressmen in Congress, I hope they would not, but they will not allow us to be eliminated by anybody. So that's not going to happen. We're still U.S. citizens, and we still have ties, guys. I mean, we're not – don't get it wrong. I mean, we still got ties to a lot of different, you know, individuals in the country. But
I think that
getting back to what I was saying, would you all agree that I'm proposing a bill to you, and if we could all vote right this second, would you all vote yay that every contract – that our government proposes, preference should be given to African-Americans on the nation's land itself and African-American businesses that exist in the United States of America. Would you agree?
I would agree to that.
Okay.
As a lawmaker, I would also add that we are not U.S. citizens and we've never been U.S. citizens and that the entire goal is to be our own citizen of something we created.
I understand that, brother, but at the same time, if you think of it, you have to think smart in one way. Dual citizenship gives us, we want to be able to always affect the political system over here. We will not give up our political power in America. The Jews don't give it up. They vote in their elections and they vote here in the American election. We're going to have our cake and eat it too. I want to be able to call up to Congressman so-and-so and say, we need you to make sure that $10 billion of
I don't think we have influence here right now, but I hear what you're saying.
Okay, I mean, you can propose that as a bill, but getting back to let us finish up that one scenario. So pretty much we all agree that we would have the contracts awarded to African-American businesses in the nation itself and African-American businesses that are located here in the United States of America. We can all agree to that.
Yeah, I think we can.
Okay. That's the beauty of what I'm trying to talk about. And then that's the law. That would be the law. So if a Koreans come over to us and say, well, we're going to do this. Well, we're sorry, Mr. Korean. But this African American company is who's been awarded the project. And then if an African American business cannot fulfill a specific contract, then what I would propose as a law in the bill is that an African American is the head project manager or the primary contractor, and that that African American would have the ability to hire subcontractors under their discretion. And then we can set out a priority list of those subcontractors. So because we want to be good for the continent of Africa, I would propose that that African-American prime contractor would give preference first to subcontractors on the continent of Africa. So maybe there's a Kenyan engineering company or a South African engineering company or a Nigerian engineering company. Okay, we want to build this road. Okay, fine. Throw your bids in. So then
oh my God,
we can
you
have.
Oh, you sound so corruptible. I'm sorry.
Once again, to be transparent, they can put their bids in. Now we have to do our due diligence. We're not going to sit there and say, oh, just because you're from Nigeria, we're going to award you the contract. No, we got to do due diligence. What did you do before? How are you doing it? What are you running? I mean, we're going to do our due diligence.
Yeah, that's done all the time now. But, you know, you was talking earlier, and I went off the subject, but I don't want to forget this because I was trying to think to mention when you was talking about Dubai. But I know a lot of African-Americans who's over in Dubai working and making a lot of money. And this one brother, who's a friend of a quarterback that was a quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. What was that guy's name? Eddie George. No, Eddie George was a running back. A friend of mine, and he had another friend who was a fitness coach. And he went to Dubai, and they paid him like $90,000 for every 6 months that he's there teaching fitness. And so it is all sorts of opportunities there in Dubai. I'm sure they still exist, too. I don't know. But that's somebody I know personally that took advantage of those opportunities. $90,000 every 6 months for what he was doing, teaching people how to, you know, do calisthenics, whatever that stuff that they be doing, trying to keep in shape and lose weight and all that stuff.
Now, there are opportunities in Dubai that I've witnessed myself, but there are also a whole huge number of enslaved people building that shit.
Yep, that's the truth. That's
from
the truth.
All black
the
men.
The Pakistanis, the Indians, they're treated like dogs.
Nigerians and Kenyans and South Africans and Zimbabweans and Ethiopians.
That's right. If they get you over there and they hire you, they pay you just enough Sudanese. They use a lot of Sudanese over there. They pay you just enough just so that you can survive. They don't give you enough so that you can fly. In fact, I remember I was in the hotel. One of the guys was there from India. He made, man, I want to say it was $8 a day. And this guy has been working in the hotel for 20-something years.
That's right.
And
the model for that you can pick up off of a cruise ship. If you ever took a cruise, which a lot of us have, and you ever talked to the staff, because it's pretty much a multicultural staff on a cruise ship from all over the world. If you ever just sit down and talk to them, if they're not getting ridden by their manager, they will tell you that their hours are horrible and that they really don't get paid that much.
You're right. And I remember I felt so bad for these guys. And he worked like, I think he worked 10 months out of the year, 11 months, and then he went home for a month. His whole family was still
You're
in
right.
India.
You're right.
His family did not live with him in Dubai. And, yeah, he made $8 a day. And the guy that was working with him was making $5 a day.
And it's 12-hour shifts. And sometimes more.
And I felt so bad for him. I remember I gave those guys a tip. I got up and I had some breakfast. And I went down there. I went up to my room. I came down. I think I gave them like $20 a piece or something like that. And they were just like, they were like in heaven. And just to show, I mean, because I felt for them. And it just, to me, wasn't right. I mean, here's a guy who gave his entire life 30-something years to these people.
And see, that's why it's important to understand our internationalism and our international globalism when we ran the world, and to know what we did right and what we did wrong and how we lost it, so that when we deal with it again, we're dealing with it from authority and not from pressure.
Well, you know what, AC? You got some of that stuff going on down south right now on some of them farms still, with black folks still working on those farms, worse than sharecroppers. And I can't think of it. I think it's a lady that was, I heard on a radio program, she was talking about she was doing those investigations in Georgia and I want to say Mississippi, but I don't quite remember. But you got people that's black that's working on them farms, almost like they were during the time of slavery, man. I can't understand. It seemed like you take off running to get away from it. And there's some places, too. It was talking about these prisons. You got this thing now where the sheriff's departments are making money for the people that they send to the pen. Like they get $25. No, this is what it was. What they would do, they would call up the adjacent county and ask the sheriff. They got like a little click going on, ask you got anybody for us. So every person that they would have in their jails, they would get like $25 a day for it. And, you know, you get about 200 or 300 or 400 people in your jail, that's a nice little piece of money there. So that kind of crap is going on today.
There's a book about that, Bianchi, called Slavery by Another Name by Blackman. And that's exactly what he deals with, is how the sharecropping and the chain gang slavery of cash, or using prison labor and chain gang labor and contracting it out to other counties, just the way you described it, is alive and well to this day. And also there was a news report on the regular news about 3 days ago reporting on how slavery in America is alive and kicking and never stops.
Well, listen, folks, I'm sorry, but I'm starting to fade out a little bit. But I thoroughly have enjoyed the time and the conversation with you guys. And I really look forward to getting on and continuing our debate and coming up with the great ideas for what we need to do, because I'm committed to it, and that's it. And for the rest of my life, that's what I'm committed to, and nothing will change my mind on that. I want our own land, and I want to rule ourselves. And I will do whatever it takes to make that happen. I fear nothing and no one on this planet, and it's time to do it. Somebody's got to step up. Let's step up.
And stay committed to it. I encourage you for that. But just remember, you must know your history to do it correctly.
I'm with you, brother, and I look forward to you teaching me that the next time I talk to you.
All right.
I'll teach you. There's things that I'll teach you, brother, and there's things that you need to teach me. That's the bottom line. We all need to teach each other. I am an expert in a few fields, very limited, and that is it. I have expertise in certain areas, but it's very, very limited.
And that's the collectivism that I was looking for.
That is absolutely right. It's going to take the collective.
Okay, Captain.
All right, guys. So thank you so much, Rob. I'll wrap to you tomorrow, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. To all, thank you so much for the evening. And I look forward to speaking to all of you very, very soon.
Nice.
Bianchi, take care, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck to you.
Okay. Good night. Good night, sister.
She got cut off.
All right.
Brother Kometu.
Yes.
That history you're talking about. Okay,
uh-huh.
Where are we failing at? Are we on anywhere on that track? Because sometimes they say history repeats itself. So where do you think we at in that process?
You know, I don't think we've recovered enough from the lies we've been taught. You know, like we talked about the other night on the phone, we still battling those three nigger factories, the church, the school, and the prison. And so until we have an effect on reducing the number of widgets or crazy people that those institutions create, it's an uphill battle. It's not impossible, but those three institutions have to be controlled by us and basically shut down in order for us to progress the way that he's speaking of, the way the brother's speaking of.
It's like they say, in order to have a fire, it's like a triangle, okay? It's fuel, there's oxygen, and then that heat source. So if you take away one of them, then you won't have that fire. So
right.
Which one we should take away first?
Probably the church.
And how would you go about doing that? Because that's something that they don't want to let go of.
And that's the biggest battle on our hands, and I don't have the full answer. I know that I got away from it from studying and from observation and from practicing something higher than what I saw.
Okay,
I don't
so
know
could,
if everyone is able to do that.
Give me your first and almost every one of them. What did you encounter first? What did you get to deal with first? What opened your eyes first?
What opened my eyes first was that I'm sitting up here looking like a black raisin, and the picture on the wall is some white slave master. Once I found out about slavery, then I started, it started with Roots. When I found out we were actually enslaved, because, I was a young buck when that came out. I think I was 8 when that movie came out. And so I really had to ask my mom, they did that to him? And I shouldn't have to have turned 8 before I knew that. And so the school would be the second thing on the list, but the church is what keeps us in the mindset to accept school.
Man,
because
you was older than 8 years
said,
old when Roots came out. Roots didn't come out in the 50s.
who said I was born in the 50s?
Piyaki.
I was born in 68. Roots came out in, 76, 77?
You that young?
Yeah, I'm 43.
I'd be damn, man. Are you still with that?
I've been studying every day since I was 20.
Yeah, I remember when Roots came out.
It was devastating. And it was devastating to the ignorant because we didn't have an idea that we were ever even treated that way.
We still use it. We still use some of that as a teaching tool today, teacher development. And we just used it just this past semester in an African.
What did you use? What exactly you're talking about?
Roots, the movie. We used the show. The course of events that happened. We basically try to show what blacks before they came here what they was doing and the course of events that caused them to come here and how they had to give up, be basically rechanged.
The best part of Roots for me was the beginning, was to see how we were actually living, albeit they were under what they were calling Islam, even though if you historically study it, at that time nobody practiced Islam, they were Mohammedan.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Now, you just said something that many people that I discuss these issues with don't say. They don't know. The Africans that was brought here was not following Christianity because Stanley and Livingston had not worked their way down to that portion of Africa at the time. They were studying.
And they didn't follow Islam either, because Islam wasn't invented until 1926.
No, it was not. Mohammedanism and tradition was the two.
Right. And Mohammedanism or Mohammedism was actually created by a Jew from Trees, France. And so what we don't understand is the series of events, the series of unfortunate events that shaped our thinking.
The Jew from Trees created that Islam. They finished putting that together. But, another point, let's see, what was I going to say? Yeah, just look at Kunta Kinte. Kunta Kinte called on Allah, and everybody else was calling on Jesus. Fiddler, Kunta Kinte kept wanting to run away because he was born in freedom. Fiddler couldn't understand what the hell was wrong with that boy.
There were some good lessons in there. I would just take it with a grain of salt since I learned about the Jewish community and their production of that movie. So the Jews conveniently left themselves out of the whole slave trade in that movie, so it still got some fault. But it's still a great teaching tool to give us a general idea of some of the things we were doing prior to getting caught up with this Western world.
Yeah, especially the man training.
Right.
That goes on in some countries. That still goes on in some countries, especially up in the northern area, Burkina Faso, Dakra, not Dakra, but Dakar.
Dakar, Senegal?
No, not Senegal, up in Burkina Faso.
Oh, okay. And I would say this too, brother, I think this is, what's your name, Kamau?
No, that's Brother Pianki.
No, is that Kamau the host?
No, this is Chef Rob.
Oh, Chef Rob, my fault. Yeah, I get caught up on y'all too because y'all sound similar. but Chef Rob, sorry about that. Chef Rob, that would be the second thing that I would speak on with the nigger factory. And the school system has to be displaced by our own rites of passage system, because the rites of passage systems in our communities were the basis of building community. And like Amos Wilson said, it was the basis of creating the tastes, the desires, the wants, and the frivolous things that we put our money and energy towards, our financial energy towards. That controls that and keeps it in our own community. And that goes into the guilds, the specialized trade. All of that is grown out of the Poro societies, the what do you call them, the Susu societies, and all of the societies that kept a culture going. And this was the question I asked last week on another talk show, was what were some of the things we practiced that made sure we kept control and hold over our market and over our people in our markets. And that would have, that of all the things I studied, the rites of passage systems and the specialized guilds for skills with age grade set structures, that is what kept us running the Songhai Empire for so long, the Maui Empire for so long, and even the ancient Kemetic Empire. And so I just get irritated by people who try to reduce our ancient past into something that is just in the past and we don't need to worry about.
Well, you know, that's a point that I always argue, too. I don't know why come black Americans and even some Africans, why come when they go back in time, they stop off at the time when we was getting our ass whooped. It seems like black people love to get their ass whooped for some reason.
That's a good point. Oh, my gosh, Yonke, I actually agree with you.
They always going back talking about the Bible crap, what is getting the hell beat out of them. You don't go back during the time when, you know, those civilizations was whooping butt, taking it to them, ruling. I mean, can you imagine putting together four divisions of 10,000 men each, like Ramessu did when he went and defeated the Hittites? Four divisions, 10,000 men each.
That's phenomenal. And that's the kind of military history we need to be studying, because quiet as it's kept, that's the military history the Vatican is studying. That's how all these other white groups have come up, is because they hid that history from the Negro and they used it. You know, the Vatican and the Catholic Church is basically a white perverted version of voodoo.
Four divisions, each of them was named after their own god. See, that's where the problem with black folks come in there. They had one division named Ptah, one division named Amun, one division named Ra, and one division named Heru.
There you go. You own it. You're right. And also, that very same king, prior to becoming king, led a campaign similar in structure throughout Spain. And so even when we come into our Moorish history about the Moors ruling in Europe for 800 years, even though in the later days they weren't all black, they were initially. And before they even got a hold of Southern Europe, the Nile Valley Africans was ruling Southern Europe for a long time. And in fact, Taharqa was a general. He wasn't even king yet. He was a general, and he had took over Spain. And there's evidence all over Spain of him being there.
Yeah, you can see it in the Spanish and the Southern Italians today. That's why I come, they're swarthy.
Right. And that's the point I was making earlier, is that when we deal with South Korea, when we deal with Vietnam, when we deal with Cambodia, when we deal with Italy, and when we deal with Spain, you're going to find that the earliest inhabitants of those regions were dusty blue, black, peppercorn, nappy-headed black folks. And that the rise of those fringe races came off the backs of those black races that laid the entire foundation. Because even the Latin language is actually Moorish Latin coming from the Etruscans or the Etrurians, or what the Greeks called the Trojans, or even the Titans. All of them are the same people of Sudanese stock from Italy.
Go ahead, brother. Finish up.
Well, I was just saying that when we know the ties from our history, you know, I'm not one who's just nostalgic and I just like to talk about, you know, our prowess when we were great. I connect every episode to the grand story of where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I do have a question, though. Okay, like earlier it was mentioned that, hey, look, the Jews got their own homeland, blah, 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 blah. They had a mission, and they had something they were following. Something that brought them this. One, when they focused in on one, basically maybe one thing or a few other things. I think money was maybe one. They had a path, a focus, a plan. So, you know, again, our focus should go ahead and be on one thing, and that's getting our own homeland. Why isn't that message just resonating with a lot of people?
Well, for one thing, that ain't for all black people. I keep trying to explain that to folks. Black folks ain't monogamous, just like anybody else. They have different diversities and so on and so on. But the thing is, you want to, just like you mentioned here, earlier mentioned about Dubai, you know, you can be born there, but you're not going to get to the point where you take control. And, I mean, that's just the way. I mean, just, and you know, you talk about Jews, that was the biggest scam I ever seen. About their homeland. You don't even want to even get to talking about that. That wasn't nothing more than a big con job.
A 1948 homeland, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big con job. See, them people putting themselves into a history that they never were in of any prominence.
But that's just, the same is true of the Arab, though. And so you're correct. But the same is true of the Arab. They were Ugrians and Baltic state crackers that was basically dumped off just like the Israelis were in 48. But they were dumped off in like the 1300s from Europe by the Romans, because they were a part of the Byzantine Empire initially. They were the slaves of the Byzantine. That's how the Arab got to the Middle East. He's not the originator there neither. So that's why, for me, the reason why I studied history since I was 20 and I'm 43 now is because I wanted to know who I was talking to when I spoke to any other race. I think my ignorance on what each race has done to my people and to themselves, that's what drove me to figure out how these histories connect. And it's given me a good ability to strategize.
Always give me a good book, brother. What should be a good book to go ahead and deal with right now, as of today?
What you want to know? Because, you know, I'm a bookseller, so I got 10,000 on my mind.
Oh, what would I want to know? Economics.
Economics?
Yeah.
You probably heard this one before, but Blueprint for Black Power.
Yeah.
And then there's one by Shaw that's, I think, called Blackonomics, which was pretty good. And then I would also say study the economics of early empires. That would give you a good implication of the international flow of economics. And I would also say a book on the ancient Egyptian culture dealing with the social and economic history of the Nile Valley.
You know, if I'm going to tell you to get a book, get is one that was written by George Shuler. It's called Black Empire.
That's a good one.
That's one of the books you're going to ever put down. Black Empire. Another
that's
book is
too.
An All-American Deal by Eric Petty, who's a native across the river from me. Another book by Jewel Copeland called Tribes, T-R-I-B-E-S, How Race, Ethnicity, and Religion Equate to Success in a Global Empire, a global economy.
And I would also include Journey of the Songhai People by Robinson. And, you know, Brother Chef Rob, my emphasis would be on the black author, although I know that there is value in all books, any author. So I'm not knocking the ones he suggested. But my first suggestion would be black authors.
You should start off with black authors because you can get all messed up reading what them white authors
say.
If you read the wrong ones,
you're right.
Yeah, and that is true, because you know, the first books I read, Well, I have, like I say, I got over 2,000 books in my library. And when I bought books, I usually bought two because I wanted to give one to my grandson, which we study that way. I have a book, he have a book, and we study over Skype. But I got a hold of some bad books in the early beginnings, too, when I started studying. And the stuff just didn't make no sense. But you know who done a very good book called Profiles in Courage was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yep.
That was a good book he done.
And I think Bianchi's a little bit older than me, so some of his books might be books that I may have seen or read, but probably from an era that I didn't grow up in.
I got some books go back to like 1847, man. By I got Christopher Columbus' diary.
Yeah, so do I. And I haven't found a lot of value because they lie so much, but there is some value in a lot of them. And for instance, like the Mohammedan thing, you won't find Islam mentioned until after the 1800s in any of those books. So you know, you do have a lot of value in those older books, and that's a good way to gauge what the modern books are saying. So I do have a good library of the old books as well.
Oh, you know, and since you mentioned that, see, it wasn't no Islam until the Quran was finished. Quran wasn't finished until 18-something.
Well, it actually started in 1873, and it was finished in 1926 and accepted by the Muslim world.
And that's where that guy Rashid came in, right?
Right.
So it couldn't have been Islam until the Quran was done.
Right. And they wrote the Quran off of the New Testament. And that's why they lie when they say Islam is 1,400 years old. No, it's not. And there never was a Prophet Muhammad. There never was a city of Mecca. And there never was a Medina. That's all recent. And what's funny about that is you know how fanatical Muslims can get when you argue with them.
Right.
I was selling books at a barbershop, and we had a whole multicultural crew, some mixed niggas, some full-blooded niggas, a Muslim from the Middle East, and some Mexicans. So out here in Colorado, niggas are cutting Mexicans' hair, and Mexicans are cutting niggas' hair. It don't make no sense. But they challenged me, and they asked me, well, what do you know about Islam? I broke that shit down in 5 minutes, and the Muslim had to shut up. And you couldn't say shit. And they usually want to bomb you if you say something. And the Mexican said, what about the Mexican? I said, y'all ain't nothing but a hodgepodge of Arab-looking mixed people. Y'all ain't no different than Arab as far as your racial makeup.
Well, see, here's the point. Then you get these Hebrew Israelites who try to say that
Mexicans
are one damn tribes of Israel. Say the Puerto Rican.
Oh, hell no. They ain't related to me.
Well, listen.
But I can't stand no Hebrew Israelite. Oh, my God.
Now,
of the most hard-headedest people, Walter Williams said, them are some of the most hard-headedest people you ever want to come across.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I would suggest that you read ancient and modern history, but I also suggest that you read ancient spirituality and psychology. Because
yeah, I was about to get
you
that.
You won't be able to endure the history, because, if you start learning it, it's going to hurt. unless you have the spirituality. Because the first thing black folks, you know, I was a bookseller, so I've been hit with damn near every kind of question you could have. Well, why didn't we fight? Well, why didn't we, how did we fall if we were so great? And I have to go back to the Lion King and say, it's the cycle of life, you idiot.
Nobody's on top of time.
Huh?
I say, hell, you on top for 10,000 years or more, so sooner or later you're going to. You know, it changed things. It's a cycle. It's a universal cycle. You know,
and then once you reach perfection, you're dead. So you know you gotta go through something. That's why rites of passage was there.
See, I have a very enthusiasm for time travel, universe, space, and stuff like that. But when we as just like the a body of water is affected by the full moon and the position of the sun and position of the planets. We as human beings are affected by those too.
Right.
The alignments of planets have an effect on human beings, and especially certain human beings. Here's another point. People talk this stuff about we all human. Well, that may be a case, but we are different in many aspects. And I was listening to this one program, and they was talking about the baby. When that baby is in the mother's womb, that baby is as pure as it possibly can be. It has no bacteria. And as it comes down, they was talking about C-section. They were talking about how C-section is actually not the best thing, because when that baby comes down the birth channel, that's where it picks up the bacteria that it needs in order to defend itself once it comes out into the real world. So check this out. If you are birthing these children through C-section where they don't have the opportunity to go through that natural process, maybe that's why come you see some of these people that's completely off the chain.
Man, you said it. I have a nephew that was born to my sister with a C-section. And that nigga is in jail right now. His parents were middle class. He ain't never wanted for shit. And he wasn't supposed to be no damn thug.
And every woman is different. They have their own stamp. And here's another point, too. People that develop in a tropical area, you're going to have a whole different mentality than people who comes up in harsh, cold climate. I don't give a damn what you say. It's a whole lot different to your mind when you can lay back and chill and walk around naked than in an area where you freezing your damn balls off and you got to piss in your hands to warm them.
Like the food you can pick off the tree, and you got to pay for every damn thing.
Right, you don't have no spices. And you know something else too, AC. I do a lot of, well, I just started enjoying, I like to cook. You know, Rab, I think I told you this, I like to cook too. I can do some cooking. But I just now started cooking some Nigerian dishes. And the thing is, the spices that they use, and they're not spices that's indigenous to Africa. These spices was indigenous to India and China. That tell you about the trade that was going on.
And the Americans.
And then I have a lot of that dried crayfish and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That saltfish. Oh, shit. And then rice and peas and saltfish.
Yeah, I have the dried crayfish, but they use the stockfish too. I don't have it right now.
That's some strong odor to it, boy.
Yeah, like I said, I don't have none right now because the whole block would know it. But I like that stockfish when they make it to the peanut butter soup, the peanut butter stew.
Yeah,
I like
groundnut stew.
Yeah, the groundnut stew. I like that.
You know what I do? I just fixed the other day. I fixed some goosey. You know?
Yeah, goosey. I still got a lot of those seeds also.
Take them seeds and you put about a half a cup of palm oil and you put them seeds in there and let them fry. Then you add the ground up shrimp and crayfish Right. You grind that up and put about a couple of tablespoons of that. You put a couple of tablespoons of thyme and about a couple of tablespoons of curry. Then whatever meat you're cooking, whether it's chicken or goat, you take the bouillon and put about a cup of bouillon in it. Then you add your either your collard greens, about 8 ounces of collard greens or spinach. Man, you're talking about something good. And put some crinkles in there. That's something
yeah.
crazy. Nigeria.
You know, that's the source of the crawfish etouffee in Louisiana, because a lot of them black folks down there are supposedly Haitian. But even beyond that, you have Mansa Musa's brother in the Mali Empire, who sent 2,000 ships to the Americas and ended up being Montezuma with the Aztecs right around Louisiana. And so, you know, when we know our history, we can actually trace back everything. And even the Mexicans with their dish called mole, or M-O-L-E, with that apostrophe.
Yeah.
Like a chocolate. It's like a chocolate sauce.
It's a chocolate.
That was actually brought to them. That was invented by one of the Negrito people from the Philippines that the Spaniards brought over.
Hmm. I'm going to have to look into that. Hey, that, yeah, man, I know I need to get with you about them cookbooks.
Yeah, that sounds good. Now you're making me hungry.
Well, yeah, I get with you about them cookbooks, but I got that, I got a bunch of that stuff. Look, brothers, I only got to, a little bit more like 12 minutes left. Look, I get some final thoughts for you from Brother Pianchi.
Well, Eric Holder and them should obey Congress, man. I'm going to tell you what. You remember back when Maxine Waters was brought up that issue about Iran-Contra and crack cocaine?
Yeah.
And she was basically trying to get the same type of information out of the Justice Department. But they, you know, basically, you know, doing what they're doing now. And remember when, as a matter of fact, the same women, remember how Maxine Waters had the question about 9/11? And she needed another senator support, and she couldn't get it on the floor. And Al Gore told her and Sheila Lee to basically sit the hell down or shut up.
Yeah, that's when they started attacking Cynthia McKinney. Go ahead, sir.
Right. And also, just look at Roger Clemens and Barry Bond, what happened to them when they were supposedly lied before Congress. So I understand the politics behind it. But that's exactly what it is. It's politics. Bush had to go through the same thing. I know we want to say that it's about race. It might have, it has some racial tint in there also, but it's politics. It's what you're seeing played out there. When Congress asks you for something, man, you got to give it to them. If not, you're gonna go through a whole bunch of shit. Congress are the lawmakers of this Congress. I'm sorry, Eric Holder. And Obama's calling executive privilege or whatever, that ain't going to stand neither. So it's going to be very interesting. And yes, you know, like the other lady said, what's her name? The one who's Speaker of the House, Pelosi, said that the way Eric Holder is putting pressure on Florida, which he has a right to, because what Florida is doing is wrong. They are expunging the voters list within 90 days of the next election, which is totally against the law, because Florida is one of the states that fall up underneath that Voters Rights Act. You know, they're not supposed to do anything that can either hamper people being able to vote without getting approval from the Justice Department. I think it's like 5 states, and Florida happens to be one. But this goes back again. What Florida governor is saying, say, hey, look, we've been trying to get this information from you, and we need to know, we come up with these names, and we have no way to know if these are illegal immigrants or not. You have that information, because immigration comes underneath the federal government according to the Constitution. So the Department of Justice did not give them the information. So what Florida said, well, we're just going to take this into our own hands. If we can't find out or determine whether or not they're citizens, we're going to kick them off the voters' roll. So that's how all that shit developed.
And I would just conclude, too, that they got kicked off, too, because we're never regarded as citizens. And I'm talking about from the Seminole Wars. And that's another good book to read, too, Chef Rob, is the Seminole Legacy in North American politics from 1693 to 1845 by Twyman, is the last name of the guy. And it, what it tells you is that the United States waged a full-fledged war against the Negro before it became the United States. And we were already here.
You know who else got a good book on there? A woman by the name of Mavis Campbell. She called them My Cimarrons.
That's good. That's very good. Very good. But what Twyman lays out is a concerted military effort at a organized military level of a black war against the United States before it became the United States as a colony.
Well, when they were fighting them during the military, the general went down. I don't remember which general it was, and he reported back and said, hey, these are black folks we fighting down here.
Yeah, Jessup. He reported to Congress that this is clearly a Negro war and that the Negroes rule the Indians.
And see,
now, that was a comment that he didn't want to make because that showed that before the European colonists came here, the Negroes were ruling the Indians. And that's why we ended up as slaves of those so-called Indians.
Well, the ones that became Cimarrons were the ones who came off the rice plantations in your Carolinas and went down into Florida, the Maroons.
That was some of them. Not all of them came from there.
Mm.
Many of them were the Corsairs that came from the islands and from southern Florida after the Moors fell. But see, that's the other thing. You have the Carthaginians, when Carthage fell, many of them, when the Romans defeated them, many of them up and left and came over here. So we have like four or five waves of Africans from Africa that came to the Americas before slavery.
And you still got Seminole County today. Right? I say you still got Seminole County today in Florida.
That's where the Trayvon Martin thing
is going on.
And I lived in Florida briefly for a time, and it's almost like Haiti. They have to keep them niggas suppressed because they whooped America's ass for a long, long time. And in fact, America never defeated the Seminole. Excuse me. They never defeated the Seminole Negro. And that's
real quick. Here's the point. Black people today is sympathizing with these illegal immigrants. But these are the same people that's taking all their jobs in your town, Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Colorado,
your
too.
Town to Chicago, you stay in Colorado, AC, but in Chicago, those jobs that blacks used to have in them hotels, I ain't talking about your motels, I'm talking about hotels. Those Latinos and the Mexicans got them jobs now. And I can guarantee you all of them was not. Hell, they talk Spanish to each other, and you ask them a question, they just look at you funny, so they don't know how to speak English.
Even when they do, they don't.
So you got Negroes that's out here in St. Louis. We had a group that went down and marched with a bunch of others protesting the Arizona law because Arizona want to do what it want to do. And I asked them, I said, you know, folks are actually taking your damn jobs and you are protesting to keep them here so they can do more of it. That don't make no damn sense.
And the problem, Pianchi, with the Mexicans is that Mexico was established by the Moors, or the children of the Moors, and the other blacks that were indigenous to the area. That's who actually won the Mexican War against Spain. And Vicente, I'm reading a good book. That's another one, good book to read too, Chef Rob, is The Legacy of Vicente Guerrero, Mexico's first black president, but the second president of Mexico. And he was a black Indian.
I've done research on him already.
And you will never hear a Mexican ever mention that there are black people in Mexico.
Yeah. I know.
I've been there. And there are millions of niggas in Mexico. I'm like, damn, where do these niggas come from?
Yeah.
It blew me away. You had to go see it to know it. You know what I mean? It's like, whoa. I'm talking about all the Central American countries. In fact, the black Negro strain makes up 51% of all of Latin America. And we still don't know that.
Mm.
So when you look at our collective numbers of North, South, and Central America, we are the highest population of any group.
Yeah, Bush didn't know. Remember he asked, oh, you have blacks too?
I remember that. I remember that.
What did he say?
Him and Condoleezza Rice was in Brazil, I think, and talking to the president. The president must have said something about black folks that caused Bush to look puzzled and say, you got blacks too?
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
That's about the time the Brazilian president said that all of the problems of the Americas was by the white man. I remember that. But also in Mexico, you had the so-called Aztecs were actually called Moors by the Spanish Jesuit priests and the conquistadors when they first seen them. Now, that was mentioned in a CNN article on the Internet. I copied it and downloaded it because it blew my mind. Because I had known that, but I had never saw no evidence. And that was 2 years ago that they reported that when they first came to Mexico, they saw Moors. And they saw a mosque, and they tore the mosque down. And so Montezuma is supposedly the Moors. And in fact, Moorish Spain didn't fall until the colonial powers defeated the black people in Peru and in Mexico City. See, that's the two-thirds of the history they leave out, that you was already here when they got here. And that's the other thing, too. If you look on Wikipedia, which is bullshit, they'll tell you that less than 1% of all slaves taken out of Africa ever made it to North America. Most of the Negroes in North America came from Central America, from North America, and from Brazil before the Portuguese imported any Africans.
Interesting.
And another one is Africans and Native Americans by Jack Forbes. He also states that many of the Brazilian women and men were labeled Negro because they couldn't distinguish them from the African. And these are Native Americans.
Mm.
So I think our sense of our history is just so incomplete, we keep getting it wrong and keep taking the wrong direction. And like I agree to an extent about what Pianki says about us supposedly being a U.S. citizen. I wouldn't say we're U.S. citizens. We're citizens of the American continent. That I would agree with, because we've always been here, even though they imported some of us. But the majority of us, they did not import. That's what I found. And my own grandparents told me I was an Indian when I told them we Africans. You know, I was 20. And I was impetuous, you know, telling my granddaddy who he was. The nigga told me, I'm Indian. He didn't say it mean or nothing. He said, I don't know what the hell you talking about.
Too many of them black Indians. Brothers.
Right.
I'm ringing in my show right now.
All
right. Give me a couple more words, and I'm going to go out because about that time.
Get those books and read them.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Push them out.
Definitely.
You like that Black Empire.
Oh, and
it's tough,
another
man.
One called Blacks in Colonial Mexico.
Black in Colonial Mexico.
That's an excellent book, and it's on Catholicism and how their system of slavery operated under the Vatican. And so they used the confessional process in order to have everybody sell each other out. That's what I learned from that book.
Wow.
Well, what year was that, AC? Because you know, they had an underground railroad that was going into Mexico. We think of the one
right.
that went into Canada, but you had one that was going into Mexico, because Mexico really didn't want America's wanted their slaves back. One of the reasons.
Right, that's the secret of how Texas was formed as a republic. Because when Mexico outlawed slavery under Vicente Guerrero, the slavery laws were stronger than the anti-slavery laws in America, and the immigrants from the East Coast in Texas said, fuck no, hell no, we keeping our niggas, and that's why they created the Republic of Texas.
You're absolutely right. All right, I'll talk to y'all later.
Okay.
All right, hotel.
Thanks a lot, brothers. My show.
All right, hotel.
Mm-hmm. master identified with himself. And if you came to the house, Negro, and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, the house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school doing nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. Field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro. Our government. I even heard one say our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy, that's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day, you come, the house Negro, to keep the field Negro in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Tom. 20th century on the turn. Keep you and me in check. Keep us under control. Keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you non-violent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts to. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. There's nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts their hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be Ethan Stephen.